Yep, we're on.
Hush.
Roll call, please.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Yvette Itu.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Pledge of allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'd like to call on Rose to swear in the reappointment of Bruce Rinker.
Thank you, Commissioner. Raise your right hand. I,
Bruce Rinker,
do hereby swear,
do hereby swear,
that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America,
that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America,
and the Constitution of the State of Ohio,
and the Constitution of the State of Ohio,
and that I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially,
and I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially
discharge the duties,
discharge the duties,
as a member of the Board of Park Commissioners,
as a member of the Board of Park Commissioners,
of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District,
of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall swear unto God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
Okay. Congratulations.
So I think we have a little shifting around here just to get our house in order. And we need a motion to approve the organization of the board. This would include the position of president, vice presidents, chief executive officer, and secretary. This is great. In his official capacity to serve on the following boards: Destination Cleveland, Flats Forward, Northeast Ohio Sustainability Community Consortium, iHeart Media Local Advisory Board, Achievement Centers for Children, and the American Red Cross Northeast Ohio Chapter Board of Directors. That's a lot to do.
Is anything left?
Also our Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer. So for those positions, we need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second?
All in favor?
Aye.
We'll go through... Well, now that you're the president, this me too. So
that was yours.
Yeah.
Yes.
This falls on you. You get to do the rest.
All right. So we're going to follow the agenda, and we have we're on item number 5 now. Good morning, everyone. We're on item number 5, which is appointment of legal counsel.
Correct. The very first action item before the approval of the minutes is the appointment of legal counsel. Rose.
Yes. Thank you, Brian. Thank you. Commissioner, this we are in year 4 of our 5-year RFP that we issued, and so really we're just approving the same rates and fees for the council that have served us very well, and we have one more year on these same terms, and so we're looking for the board's approval.
So moved.
Second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm.
Item 6 is the approval of the minutes from the December 19th board meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We now have the financial report. Kate?
Thank you, Madam President. We'll get the PowerPoint keyed up there. Perfect. Thank you, Ben. Well, we're going to go through the complete fiscal year. This is the 12 months ending December 31st. In comparison to last year, and at a high level, we had a good year, very much like last year. It mirrored last year. We'll go through a few of the highlights, and then I'll see what questions you might have. First, I wanted to point out that you'll see that we did come up $719,000 in property tax revenues above 23. I've been talking about this for a while. That's about 0.75%. So we've lowered our estimate going forward and our 10-year projection to 1%. I should add, we just received our first half real estate tax advance Wednesday. It was just over $4 million, $4,146,000, which is 60% of the collections to date, which were $6.9 million. That's lower than normal. According to the county, they said the Department of Taxation was late in getting the certification of values and rates out. The county treasurer's on the news this morning, in fact, saying that the bills just went out, so it's kind of hard to make tax collections when bills just went out. So we won't see our second half deposit till sometime in February because bills are due February 20th. this does have an impact on us and other levy-funded organizations. I believe that the county will get the second half out in a more timely fashion, but this does cause cash flow to lag a little bit for everyone. So we're a little bit behind where we'd normally be at this point. The other thing I wanted to point out is that for the year, we were up about 0.6%. We're about $1 million over last year, so very consistent with last year. Expenses were up about 8.5%. A big part of that was operating costs, inflation, and some salaries. But all in all, after operations, operating revenues, operating expenses, almost $49 million positive. So we had a good year. We're happy with it. We're right where we expected to be. Then you can see we had capital outlays of just over $50 million. This is right in line with the plan that we had.
Can I just look at down to the $9 million? With our projection, our 10-year projection, were we projecting 1% increase in property taxes and we got 0.7? Is that what you're saying?
When I, Commissioner, when I did the original projection, I was assuming a 1.5% growth in real property taxes over the 10 years. I thought with the building and things that were going on in the county, now I think it's going to be more like 1%. We're still trying to understand that. I've been in conversations with the county because, to me, when I just look around, it seems like there's more than 1% real growth going on. I just don't know why we're not catching it. But we'll have a much better feel when we meet in February, because I'll have the second half advance, and that'll be a much true, a much better measure of what's our property tax going to look like for 2025.
Okay, thanks.
Now let's go to the zoo. And quite simply, the zoo did great. If you look at just general admissions, they're up 12.7%, compliments to the zoo. They did a great job. One of the things that we talk about often is what our subsidy is. I've highlighted this in blue because the subsidy this year was just over 30%, 30.1%. This subsidy was 31.1%. So you can see a lot of numbers, but when you just evaluate it based on subsidy, the zoo performed slightly better than last year. Their subsidy went down 1%. Very, very happy. Total revenues are up 7.6 for the year. Total expenses are only up 6.1. So again, the zoo was right where we thought they would be. The one thing you would note, and we've talked about, capital outlay was a little lower in 24 than 23. This number would be much higher, as we all know, with the reinforced project being full go next year in 25. And then in golf, again, they did outstanding. Greens fees were up 15.2%. Part of that was impacted by Ironwood. So I went back and looked at the rounds played in 24, and total rounds played were up 27,050 over 23, which when you adjust out Ironwood, that puts us up about 8%. So if we assume that this is 15%, but rounds played are up 8%, organically, then Ironwood would be about a 7% impact. Total revenues are up 19%. When you have people playing golf, they're renting equipment, they're eating food, they're buying merch. All of those things are positive, so we're up 19.6%. Expenses are up 19.4%. After operations, before capital, zoo, what can I say? They were $3.7 million positive. They did extremely well, $600,000 better than the previous year. Now, I should add, it's going to be hard to match those numbers. Brian and I have talked about this, and Joe. We're dependent on the weather. Last January, we had a good January. I don't think we're going to get much golf in this January. It's going to be hard. So this part of our organization is very weather dependent, and if the weather's not there, it's not going to be possible to meet that same number. But both years back to back have been very good. Compliments to the golf team. They did outstanding. And then the best performer I highlighted was Big Met. When you look at their net revenues, the $438,600 to the just over $599,000, their net operating surplus was up 36.6% over the previous year. And you can see, as I looked at all of the different individual courses, we were pleased with how everyone performed. They all performed very close. If you look at Washington as an example, $230,000 to $240,000. And there's the impact of Ironwood. Ironwood dropped almost $50,000 in net revenues, which was a new add. Just this was our first year of having them in full. They came online in 23 at the end of 23.
Can I ask a question about Big Met? Is it hard to get a reservation to play golf there?
From what I'm told, it's very busy. I don't know how you would define hard. If you were to play on a Tuesday at
that would be
11 o'clock, maybe you could get out there. But my understanding, I know the golf team's here. I think it's the public course with the highest number of rounds played in the state of Ohio. It's the most played course.
Very possible that that would be correct.
Thanks.
Now we'll jump to enterprise, and you'll see that net revenues slid just a little bit, $430,000 last year to $355,000 this year, but still had a very good year. A few things that were down a little bit in 24 were the chalet. We've lost a little bit of parking revenue because we lost a tenant for a while. And you'll see in the detail, Merwin's was down a little bit from where they were in 23. But a couple of operations on the enterprise side that were up in 24 were Huntington and East 55th just did outstanding. So I look at our enterprise operations in total. Sometimes some will be up, others will be down. The next year it might flip. But as long as your enterprise operation is contributing over $350,000 to the other operations of the Park District, that's really, really good. Total revenues were up 5.7%. Expenses were up 7.3%. Again, I just look at things in terms of how do they line up with what we thought was going to happen, what our budget is, and they lined up where we thought they would be. Here's some of the detail. As I'd mentioned a minute ago, you can see Merwin's is down just a little bit. Had a $226,000 positive year compared to 268. But then you heard me mention East 55th went from 479 to 607. So some are up, some are down. On the next page, Huntington is the one that really jumps out at you. When you look at it, bottom line, $91,000, it just continues to grow at almost $155,000 in net operating revenue after all the improvements we made there. And then last, we'll close with the nature shops. I've got to give you the what I call the not so good with the good. Revenues were down 9.4%. Again, we've talked about Hinckley being closed. That impacts us $200,000 to $300,000 a year. So when you think just $200,000 a year is what the impact would have been in revenue, and we're only down $71,000. E-commerce, mobile sales, other things in terms of the nature shops, what we're doing on the retail side is up. So they're making up for that loss. When Hinckley comes back on, When Hinckley comes back on, this number is going to go dramatically up. So they're where we thought they would be given what we're doing as far as the dam and things like that. All in all, it's been a good year. As I step back from it, I looked at 24, it was better than 23, but I'm also cautiously optimistic because we think about property tax and we think about weather. I mean, so we're a very weather-dependent organization. But we'll just keep our eyes on the 25 budget, and I'll keep reporting to you monthly as we go along, whether or not we're in line with what you expect and what the 10-year plan has.
Thank you. Any questions on the financial report?
No, we're good.
Do we accept the report? No. Okay. All right. Then we are moving on to new business, CEO's report.
General action items, the very first one is the 2024 first budget adjustment number 13. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 11, you'll see budget adjustment number 13. This adjustment goes against the 2024 activity. It's for $131,000. We thought we had caught all the adjustments, but since we met in December on, I think, the 19th, we had a few things that we had to true up at the end of the year, and this relates to workers' comp and healthcare expenses. And so it's a small adjustment that is called 13 because it goes against 24.
And that's just shifting from one to the other?
Yeah, one account to the other. There's no net impact. We just had the expense lines misaligned. And so the details on page 31 and 32, I would ask your approval of budget adjustment number 13 for 2024.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Next is the designation of 2025 legislative consultant, Cleveland Metro Parks, for over greater since all the way back to 2010, has used Capital Consulting. We've had very good success at a wide variety of different ways, keeping us apprised of all of the moving activity that goes down at the State House in Columbus. They helped us with the lakefront transfer and a number of other things we're still working on with them as well. We feel very comfortable with their fee and the results that we get. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 12.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment number one, 1736, design builder for Cleveland Metro Parks Baldwin Creek Lowhead Dam Removal Millstream Run Reservation. This is GMP1. We were able to partner a few years back with the sewer district and a host of others to really provide an opportunity for warm water habitat, fish passage. 510 linear feet of Baldwin Creek flows through this particular area. We are bringing forward the GMP number one with biohabitats in the amount of total $396,106 and pre-construction of $13,000 for a total of $523,496 to be approved. This is a continuation of being able to provide high quality projects within the park district.
Move the motion.
Second.
Just quick question. We received a grant from the Ohio EPA. Did I miss how much that was? How much that grant was for? Is it covering the entire?
I'm sorry, Commissioner, I'll have to look that up. I don't know the amount of the grant right off the top of my head.
All in favor?
Aye.
Very good. The next action item is design builder Cleveland Metro Parks Wood Creek Fish Passes and Stabilization. This is in the Bedford Creek. This is RFP 687B design builder. This is a continuation, again, of the work that we continue to do across the park district. What's that, Bruce?
No.
RFP analysis, we look to award to Stantec. They offer sustainable engineering, architecture, and environmental consulting. This will be one of the first times that we've been working with them. We determine them to be best value. Pre-construction cost to include $74,880 under Ohio revised code. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion, top portion of page 17.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Rocky River Reservation Authorization to Submit Grant Application and Commit Funds. This is through the ODNR, Office of Coastal Management, offers a grant assistance program to support Lake Erie coastal resources, including public access to Lake Erie. We did hear from one of our constituents about one of the challenges. We were already well into this process. We do understand that non-motorized and motorized traffic along certain waterways can create some conflict areas. We've worked very hard to partner with the grant assistance program, Coastal Management, for $125,000. We will match that, and we will work downstream to work away from the particular motorized boat area. This will hopefully reduce the traffic in at least that particular area. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 18.
Move the motion.
Second. Nice.
Yeah, this is good. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Ohio Department of Brownfield Remediation. This is item number F, demolition and remediation of the Graincraft property, authorization to submit grant and commit funds. I'm going to have Sean come up real quick just to kind of break it down for us. This is the 3.3 acre parcel of land that Cleveland Metro Parks picked up in 2023. This is a program that helps assist for funds remediation and potentially building demolition along the way. We are working with the Cuyahoga County Land Bank and Cuyahoga County relative to this project to make sure that we can come up with the best, highest and best use. Sean.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, commissioners. Happy to be before you. Actually, before we jump into this, we can answer the question on the grant amount for the Baldwin. We have $700,000 in a grant. And as you'll see, what we brought before you today that you approved is actually less than $700,000 because mm-hmm. we still need to come before you for GMP2.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sean. I was looking it up.
Absolutely. So with Graincraft and Cereal Foods and Cleveland Metro Parks efforts to bring public access along the riverfront, the effort here is to really set ourselves up for options. So what's in front of you today is asking for approval to apply for brownfield funding that we think that we have a pretty good chance of getting. And what that would do is it would allow us to do additional studies in terms of the environmental history of the former Graincraft property. And then if awarded, it then gives us the ability to do remediation. Also, if we need to, we could potentially raise certain portions, remove certain portions of the property. We're only looking at raising certain portions of this property.
This is a pinch point, isn't it?
It is the pinch point. Yeah. The goal here with these properties is to have a all, a public access trail along the riverfront. And without having this property under control and without being able to redevelop it, we will not be able to accomplish that goal. First and foremost, the Graincraft property is part of a larger assembly of properties that we have been working on together to acquire. So the property to the north is Cantonese Classic Seafoods. The properties across the street, which are also portions of Graincraft property and Cantonese Classic Seafood, create somewhat of a campus of buildings. We're also working with the city of Cleveland on some rights for the three parcels to the south of the Graincraft. Why we're doing this is to put together a cohesive plan. What we're looking to do by the end of the month is re-release and amend an RFP, so a request for proposal from interested real estate developers to look at this area as a whole, because there's a lot of very good potential here for reuse and reimagination of these buildings, potentially the silos, the large masonry building on the Graincraft property. The former Cantonese Classic Seafoods property has some redevelopment potential. The Geist building has some redevelopment potential. The Inman building at the corner, we've been looking at some park type uses for that. So what we want to do is set ourselves up for success, release that RFP, see what the development community says back to us, what the market interest is, but we also need to have the ability to bring some funds to the project, and that's what the application is before you here today. So through the Brownfield funds, we have then the ability, hopefully if awarded, at the Graincraft building to remediate. If we don't get good feedback from the development community, then we may have to look at raising some of those structures, and what's before you will give us the ability to do that. If it's
this gives us options.
This is options, correct.
Where are the silos again, the grain silos?
So there's actually two different sets. Down here is what most people are, when we talk about the silos of Graincraft, they're on the southern portion. There's a few on the north side, but I think most people are attracted to the ones on the south side.
Okay, and then where would the trail go?
So the trail will go along the river. So starting from Rivergate, where we've already got an easement with the Cleveland Run Foundation, we'd get up to British, and then we'd hug the river. And then we have to do some pretty creative engineering. There's some portions of these structures that we'd actually have to work through if they remain. And then we would hug the river up to Center Street, cross Center Street, at the Merwin intersection, and then back to Heritage Park, where
okay,
we've already done
I
some
see.
Work.
Show us where Canal Basin is.
So Canal Basin Park, the larger Canal Basin Park, if you will, is this 25-acre area here. And then Heritage Park is along the river. This is where we recently installed the new boat docks.
And you said one of the partners basically is City of Cleveland.
Yes, both in Canal Basin Park, City of Cleveland is the driver, but one of the partners in the endeavor here and one of the stakeholders that we're working with is the City of Cleveland. As the three parcels to the south of Graincraft, they own, and we've been talking to them now, Brian, for what, 9 years about those three parcels?
And that area there that looks at their trucks, what's going on there now?
So the area was used by Graincraft when they were in operations via Cereal Foods for loading and storage. But
yeah,
today specifically, the Port of Cleveland has an agreement with the city for use of these three parcels to help with loading and unloading as it relates to the stabilization project occurring on Irish Town Bend.
Okay.
So we're playing long ball.
We are playing long ball. We're setting ourselves up for options, and we need to make sure that we do because now that we're the property owner, we really want to get moving with making sure we can get public access here in a near term.
I think it's fantastic the way we're looking at this in a whole way. Not just trying to buy what we desperately need, but trying to facilitate the whole thing and acting as more of a more entrepreneurial fashion.
Approximate principle.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, when we started this over a decade plus ago, I don't know that we thought that all of these would kind of fall into line, and not that we want to emulate another city, but San Antonio, Chicago, Milwaukee, these river walks are extremely important, the conductivity is very important. On the map, you see where the towpath comes in. When you see Center Street, and that was part of the Reconnecting Cleveland plan on the opposite side, and then you look at where the path is going to come on the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Lake Link Trail, we'll literally have paths on opposite sides and connected to the flats into the downtown center. The ultimate goal is whether we use parts of Columbus, we come through British, we move down French, kind of through the area right there where the old Flats Industrial Railroad worked, you know, coming down Columbus, do we pivot into where Carter Road is? Conversations with Bedrock, certainly the Park District is involved in at least a portion of the redevelopment strategy on that side, but you know, in a decade, could you imagine a connected Cleveland through basically a river walk all the way, almost from the mouth of the Cuyahoga River all the way around into the stadium district? I think that's, you know, a very good long game. Does it come with its challenges? Absolutely. Adaptive reuse, you know, this is one of the oldest, most historic areas, but the Park District is setting itself up, and this is part of the complementary vision for the Valley, and candidly, no one else was doing it, and so we this board has stepped forward with the chops to move this big project forward for this region. So I applaud them.
Excellent.
Well done. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Move approval.
Second.
We need to do it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Tabulation of award and bids is next. Commodity usage report. Fun stuff. Portable toilets, but necessary. Marine fuel. Tahoes for police vehicles. And Lakefront Building, Ohio East Gas Company. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 20.
Move approval.
Toy boat. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 29, you'll see resolution 25-01-001 in the amount of $11,634,031.34. These vouchers, including wires, have all been reviewed as to their legality, and the expenditures conform with the Ohio Revised Code, and I would ask your approval.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. I think if that ends.
We'll move into public comment.
Thank you. Public comment? Marty. Thanks. And then Tom. Thanks.
Good morning. An unfortunate follow-up on the insurance presentation, which featured your management of risk hazards giving lower premiums. First, it was the rainforest fire, luckily without injury, and a subcontractor, but our tax dollars. Then the Chalet toboggan crash with injuries. Even as Facebook claims, you can't go wrong with winter fun at the Chalet, except. The obvious question is who's supervising those in charge, as Metro Parks is ultimately liable for those choices. So inconvenient that a reporter was there and witnessed the Chalet accident, then posted at cleveland.com. That story also made a point of Metro Parks' unhappy reputation for secrecy. It's well known that merely covering something bad at Metro Parks can cost media their advertising dollars. Powerful leverage given your media budget. But is that really the way a public tax-supported entity should function? Measuring success by hiding the truth from its supporters? We see the warm and fuzzy stories or naming contests or promos for new attractions quickly rolled out to distract from bad news. Washington politics are exposing how easy it is for money to gain favor with the powerful. Locally, Metro Park's downtown connections, plus their sports interests, plus the ads bought on iHeart, call for our skepticism. Endless funding is quickly approved to buy downtown property, while safety improvements for the Emerald Necklace Marina, brought to your attention over a year ago, now sit waiting on a grant. If someone gets hurt in the meanwhile, you should be held totally responsible, as you will be for the toboggan accident. Wallace Lake infrastructure was replaced with a huge building, but what about the quarry's hazards? Those were also described here after two separate fatal accidents. The estimated $3 million project couldn't address drownings. As it is, those construction costs are not even shown as CapEx for Wallace Lake. They'll be ignored when the concession and rental income there is heralded as profitable. Maybe you could even acknowledge the environmental cost of increasing the impervious surface draining into the lake. Safety and clear accounting are two subjects I have harped on without obvious effect. You proclaim that safety is and continues to be a top priority for Cleveland Metro Parks. Chris Quinn observed, "Of course, the Metro Parks did what they always do in cases like this, refuse to provide information." Well, the Metro Parks are a true jewel. It's the worst public body I've ever dealt with when it comes to withholding public information. Dumb, dumb, dumb. Serves only to magnify the issue. A $270 million budget just to start the year. More than enough to promote amenities while glossing over anything else. That's disrespectful and an injustice to your supporters and patrons. Our tax dollars are being spent to mislead and distract while not protecting us from real risks. Make a New Year's resolution. Choose to do right. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian, Andy. The one question on the on that toboggan thing, I wasn't fully aware of. Can you tell us about what happened there? And I know that I remember my my junior year in high school, we had a toboggan accident at Mayfield Country Club and knocked out a third of the wrestling team in one accident. So toboggans are like skiing, or comparatively chancy, so I realize the inherent risk, but I also recognize the joy of a fast toboggan ride with snow going over your head and not hitting any trees.
Yeah, Commissioner, thank you for your question. So when the incident happened at the chalet, it was Friday night, and the you know, Marty and the plane dealer, you know, didn't communicate the facts right. In fact, our communications director immediately responded to the reporter and shared information. But as is appropriate, we're never going to be ahead of the facts. It's important for us as an entity to gather all of the facts and make sure they're accurate. And so we were very timely in our response to the reporter, and it's unfortunate that Chris Quinn made such a broad brushstroke conclusion when, in fact, this is the sixth year of the state auditors program that we've participated in, and we always get the highest rating for our public records compliance. So his statement is way off base, and we have a very solid reputation of maintaining an excellent and responsive public records program. You know, incidents happen. We are still, you know, that evening, the safety check was run before the chalet was open without incident. We are still, you know, just ascertaining what exactly happened in that incident. But as you know, with many of our activities, there are risks involved, and we have a very solid risk management program, and we are always doing our due diligence to make sure that things are as safe as possible. But we can't guarantee safety, and we don't proclaim to guarantee that nothing ever goes wrong.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other comments?
Any other public comment? Tom?
Hello, my name is Tom Yablonsky. I'm semi-retired, and I still help run for downtown Cleveland three major historic financing programs, which are relevant to Sean's recent presentation. I broke one of my rules from being here because I overreacted to a Neotrans blog, which had much misinformation in it. From yesterday.
Shocking.
Shocking, okay. But I applaud the presentation by Sean and your effort to create a campus with the Graincraft buildings. I was the catalyst to get those buildings on the National Register. They are on the National Register as part of the Cleveland Center Historic District, and they're eligible for as I said, three programs, federal tax credits, state historic tax credits, which I was one of the people helping set up that program with the governor's office, and then a unique program that doesn't get enough play, oh, because it's complicated, but I've run for 22 years the historic conservation easement program for Cleveland, and there were many projects in that mix that were supposedly not doable. Just a couple of quick ones. The arcade skylight was thought not to be financeable and repairable. Cost $12.5 million to do that. $12.2 million of that $12.5 was through a conservation easement, which I helped structure. Another one was the Bingham Building, which because of the thickness of the floors, thought was undoable to do for housing. The easement there gave $10.5 million to a $62 million project. Another one was the House of, I could run through about 20 of these. We hold 83 easements in Cleveland. They've probably generated over $350 million in equity towards numerous projects. I'm not going to say it's simple. It also has been under great challenge by federal audits of the land easements, which are loaded with way more fraud than historic. Historic easements almost have none, but unfortunately we're painted with the same brush. But all those tools, the reason I give you those is I've had multiple developers want to take a run at hopefully what is your development outreach on thinking there could be something spectacular with these buildings that's world class, speaks uniquely to Cleveland's industrial history. And the other assist, we can help with that planning and feasibility. We've won numerous smaller grants through the Ohio and Erie Canalway National Heritage Area to do feasibility and to do project development. Again, not a well publicly known program, but critical. That organization gave a grant to help set up the original historic district. Also, another historic district where you own property. We have a small historic district on Old River Road. If you're familiar, north of that district, almost all the history was knocked down. I would argue that gave us kind of a generic setting in the flats, not showing the true Cleveland. So hopefully, and because I know you're a partner in those land holdings on Old River from St. Clair Hill north to what I called this district and I worked on creating it, SOWO, south of Wolstein, because everything above was knocked down. But so there's numerous historic opportunities here. You guys are, I realized when I came here, I have to tell you, I'm in the metro parks every day. I'm on trails every day. And it's so spectacular that I felt reluctant to even come here and suggest something was, but I overreacted to that story. I can tell you're doing, hopefully to do something pretty spectacular. And I offer my assistance and I will be involved in the development community looking at when it goes out to them to possibly do something collaborative.
Tom, can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. You mentioned three potential funding sources. Can you give us a little more of an understanding of quantitatively what those might be to the area that
plenty of the buildings qualify for a 20% federal tax credit. It's a private incentive, equity incentive.
Okay.
The state has a 25% tax credit, but even though it's 25%, its value is probably about 70 to 75 cents on the dollar. The federal credit sometimes inches closer to 85 to 90 cents on the dollar. So if you had simple math, you had a $10 million project, those two together could give you about 90% of a $2 million federal credit, 90% of that, $1.8 million of a $2.5 million state credit, 70 cents on that, whatever that math is. Can't do it that quick in my head. And then the easement is actually very variable depending on what the development opportunity is nearby. And
then there was a third.
That's the conservation easement.
Oh, okay, so the third.
There's
be
three. There's a two are tax credit. One is a deduction based on somebody's tax filings.
Okay.
And that's, as I said, that's complicated, but Cleveland is the second largest program in the country of that program. And the Cleveland Foundation funded creating it in 1998. And its first project to get financing was 99, and I've run it the whole time. So I'm very hopeful to be collaborative with the developer interest of this site.
Very good.
I would just say thank you. Thank you, Tom, for everything you've done. You could probably write a book on this in terms of everything.
Yeah, I have a contract to write a book, but I'm not that good at writing.
There you go. I don't doubt it. You would make a great story. I know you've been involved in a number of projects, a number of programs that have helped to get Cleveland to where it is today. We have a very rich history. We have a lot of buildings. You know better than anybody.
Thank you for that. I'll make two comments.
There's some buildings we're going to try to do whatever we can do. There's sources out there that we can try to do it. You know, even with all of those sources, sometimes
doesn't work.
Sometimes it just doesn't work. So,
right.
But thank you for everything that you've done and for your comments today. And I would just say, just because we do a lot of these projects and we finance a lot of these projects, that it's a variable rate in terms of where the market is on the tax credits. So it really does vary anywhere from 65% to where about 80% right now for the historic. So depending on where the market is, how much it can bring in, the cost of the construction, and it's only the qualified cost. It's only the cost that'll
QREs.
Get you. So there's a lot of variables, but it does, there are sources that we should all be thinking about when we look at these projects. So thank you for your comments today.
You're welcome. I just make two comments. One is I truly believe we have the best park system in the country, and I promote that to try to attract developers. And we're kind of an unsung hero. There's been articles in the New York Times and Washington Post over the last year saying that we're also the leader nationally in historic preservation, adaptive reuse, which both
yes.
those things are true. So hopefully they could come to a nexus here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Any other public comment?
Very good.
Thanks.
Okay. Info items we'll move into. Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center, Lakefront Reservation. This is just Sean providing an update of kind of where we're at.
Good morning again, Commissioners. I'm going to provide you a rather brief update on the Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center as we're gearing up the project, nearing construction commencement. Brian brought a vision to the park several years ago about increasing public access on the lake, about partnering, and about being able to teach youth sailing, giving opportunities where maybe they didn't exist before. So specifically, Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center, we're going to zoom in here to East 55th. In East 55th Marina, this gives you just a general depiction of how things exist today. Large, successful operating marina. And this is actually sits within the larger planning unit of what we're proposing for Cheers. We've got the proposed Mandel Community Trail connecting to this portion starting next year or this year. So we have an emphasis here at East 55th, and there's a lot of investment occurring here and then at South Gordon Park as well. We've taken a look into the future here to develop a concept plan for East 55th Marina in working with and making sure that we're communicating with the boaters. We want to make sure that we still have secure parking. We want to make sure that we've got a way to both provide public access but also provide for operational needs of the marina itself. What we're showing here on the east side and the west side are two new structures, both of which consist of the Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center. We're going to walk into a little bit of detail on the east building and on the west building, but what you can see here is a concept plan, and one of the strongest components of this concept plan and some of the modifications we'd like to make to East 55th is this spine between these two buildings. We're currently in discussions for potential funding of that spine, but one of the things that we're also working on here is with the Regional Sewer District, as they have a combined sewer overflow which, believe it or not, flows under the marina and out the headwall on the north side of the marina. And that's a really, really tricky piece of infrastructure because it's submerged. So one of the things we're working with them is in 2026, they would like to intercept that combined sewer overflow, which flows north into the lake, intercept it in the parking lot, and bring it out to the west. So that also gives us some opportunity to do some additional work in the parking lot and reimagine the East 55th Marina parking.
Sean, why do they want to do that?
This piece of infrastructure, which they own, is getting to the point of its useful life.
Okay.
Yes. And it is almost impossible to maintain. That and the fact that if they were to ever have a failure in the Marina Basin, it's something that they don't want and something we don't want, and it would be really, really difficult. So now that we're planning, and the sewer district's been a wonderful partner, so now that we're planning all of these things, we said that the time is right, both to relocate and make sure that we're master planning all this. I also add that with CHEERS, and just off the page to the north, one of the first potential phases of CHEERS would be the View, which is just north of the East 55th Marina Wall. We would either have to extend the CSO at that time or relocate it. So the fact that the sewer district is coming on in 2026 to do this themselves, it's good coordination and it's good planning.
So would the release be looking at the big break wall? Would that be inside the big break wall?
Yeah, it's going to be right over there.
Well,
but the release of the sewage, would that take us outside the big break wall? Or?
Are you talking about existing or proposed?
The proposed.
No.
Proposed is still inside the break wall. It's here at, I believe this is what was called Giddings Brook. It's an old outfall. There is already a combined sewer outfall here today that the sewer district maintains. So they felt it was best to combine them at that point.
But in other words, you're not talking about releasing them at that point, no.
Yeah.
It would be, but the other thing that is coming online, and you can see the work happening in Gordon Park right now, is the lakefront interceptor tunnel. The number of times that the combined sewer overflow will be releasing in the future is going to be drastically reduced because they will have the deep tunnel in an active state coming here in the near term.
How big a pipe is that?
It's about 6 feet in diameter. So it's a large
tunnel?
One. It is not a tunnel.
The tunnel will be.
Oh, the tunnel is 120 feet deep and 20 foot in diameter.
Okay.
And it's a large piece of infrastructure. Mm.
Where's the tunnel to run?
The tunnel runs south of I-90.
And
then it'll run out to the Easterly Wastewater Treatment Plant. Okay, back to some more fun and pretty things.
Oh, no, we can talk.
Sean, this is a sailing center up here?
Yes. Thank you. So let's go to the pretty pictures.
You always got to deal with it.
Yes, great questions. We're here for all of it. So Patrick S. Parker Sailing Center, and I'm going to move quickly through these, and I want to reiterate that the Metro Parks team, in partnership with the Metro Parks team, Ryan Danker and Christopher Whittison, have put together these materials, and they are the architects of record on this, which really, really helps us in these projects. So in the Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center, we're working with Whiting Turner as our contractor. We're now at the stage where we're finalizing drawings, finalizing budgets, and all the details of the building. The building, the East Building itself, will be a great location for education in partnership with the Foundry, who will teach sailing classes. We will have and house the operations of East 55th Marina. We'll have a wonderful patio, community rooms, this great lobby where when you come in, where the community is invited, you know, we'll have a sailboat there on display to immediately kind of communicate what the building is for and how it can be used. We'll have on the second deck with great views of the lake. Does that look like you, Bruce? So we'll have these wonderful opportunities to have this flexible building, and then assuming and hoping that the budget can afford it, we're looking at a tower here that helps us do views for regattas and also act as a starting station. What we're looking at here is the interior boathouse. This is where it can be taught how to mast a sailboat, how to work on the lasers and the 420s. You can see here that the Foundry will have a major presence here in partnership with the Metro Parks. This is that same space showing how we can incorporate both steps and this wonderful kind of classroom experience. Then we'll move to the West Building. The West Building is more of kind of the functional building. And one of the reasons we split the buildings is that in the West Building, you have almost immediate access to open water. So we can get you on a small craft and get you through the break wall, but yet still within the protected harbor, within Cleveland Harbor. So that's why we've got operations here at the West Building and operations at the East Building. At the West Building specifically, like I said, more utilitarian. We've got open bays, classrooms. We're proposing a covered classroom on the east end of that building. the ability to launch quickly, and we'll also have the ability to get small craft into the water. First and foremost, we're looking to raise the former or the current infrastructure on the site. We're going to be bringing forward to you at the February board meeting a request for GMP1 with Whiting Turner so that this building can be coming down this spring in preparations then for a May 9th groundbreaking with partners. And from then, we will then be in earnest starting construction in the May-June timeframe going vertical.
How long to build?
Our goal is to be open in operation by Memorial Day of 26.
Wow.
Yes. So.
More revenue.
We'll make Wade happy. With
That's
that,
really cool.
Happy to answer any questions you may have on the update.
Well, I think this is another example of a terrific cooperation with, I think the people from Parker Hannifin have been fabulous on this. And Brian, you've done a wonderful job, you know, chasing all these people around. And there'll be a sailing school there that'll be named after one of Cleveland's great boat builders, probably the most famous modern boat builder in Cleveland, which was the Britton family and the Tartan Marine sailboat. So I think this is terrific. And of course, the foundry has just been fabulous in this, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, this is a total team effort between internal planning, Natalie's team, and the fundraising, the partnerships through, I mean, so many different organizations to see the vision. You know, when we arrived here in 2010, that was one of the challenges, is how do we open up the lakefront? How do we create access? And so if you think from west to east, you know, you think of the work that had been done to redo the Noshery and, you know, the area over in Huntington Bay Village area. Then you look at the Edgewater facility there, Edgewater Beach House. You look at the bridge component to tie in and the trail. You know, so we've incrementally continued to walk through the lakefront. And then you look at the reimagination of this particular area here. And without the strong support of the Mandel Foundation, it wouldn't be possible either. So when you look at Cleveland Foundation Mandel and the others that have supported and community support, there's a lot of just personal dollars that are put into this, which is phenomenal. Then you look at the trail connection from East 9th all the way to East 55th and the continuation on to 72nd and MLK, Gordon Park redo, and then not to be outdone, our partners with Western Reserve and the work that they've done to create a campus feel. You know, it's interesting, we look at the acreage, and the acreage that Villa Angela, Euclid, Wildwood, and the components are actually larger than the land body that sits at Edgewater. So when you look at this regional concept, I think, you know, the challenge was accepted, and we continue to produce on where we can create access points for the public and have people see themselves there.
Great job.
Super.
Thank you, Sean. The next is the 2024 Outdoor Experiences Division Highlights and Recap. Mary?
Great, thank you. Good morning. We appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning to give some highlights from our year in outdoor experiences. All right, I'm just making sure I got this right. Outdoor experiences, this is not going to, oh, there we go. Outdoor Experiences, as many of you know, is the team that focuses on the education and programming on the park side of things. When we look at Cleveland Metro Parks' mission, we are really the team that works in making those connections. So taking that mission of connection, conservation, and inspiration and bringing that to life. So the team itself, we're a big group. We have 9 different units. We have the 5 nature centers. We have our nature preschool program, which actually operates in 3 different locations, our community programs division now, which has combined mobile outreach and youth outdoors, and our outdoor recreation team. In 2025, we had about 85 year-round staff, and then we staff up in the summer, primarily around summer camp. And in 2024, we hit a new milestone in terms of both the number of programs we offered and the number of guest experiences. So we're over 600,000 guest experiences for 2024. Summer camp, I mentioned that earlier. This is really where we put a lot of our energy during the 3 months of summer and planning throughout the year. We feel this is a very important way to expose children to nature, to give them that unstructured or structured time outside. One of the things that I noticed when I came on board in 2019 was that our wait list was almost twice the number of spots that we offered. So the team has really taken on this challenge to figure out how can we offer and engage more children during summer camp? So you will see that from 2019 to 2024, we have almost doubled, we have more than doubled the number of camps, the number of campers, and we have tripled our revenue. We're getting close to sort of finding the sweet spot of supply and demand, and every year we tweak it a little bit, but really proud of the work the team has done in this area.
How many people asked to go to camp but couldn't be accepted because of this,
this year? Our wait list was more, and the wait list, sometimes it's people want a very specific camp, not just any camp. I think this year we were around 300 or 400, and it was 2,000 when we started. A lot of that comes from the high demand camps, outdoor recreation, that because of the types of programs, they tend to be really small groups. So we might have a list of 30 campers for a sailing camp that only has 8 spots.
Okay.
One of the reasons, I think Mary just highlighted, our sailing camps were always oversubscribed. We just couldn't provide. We didn't have space. And so now we're trying to create that level of activity. So that was how we knew that there was demand for what we were working on. And when you look at the work that the Foundry and the Coast Guard and the others, and then Rachel and her team, they continued to grow, but there was no more space for us. And so this is a tremendous opportunity.
Great, thank you. Speaking of summer camps, another thing that we took a look at is how can we more equitably offer summer camps to all residents of the Park District? So back in 2023, we revamped the way that we did scholarships for summer camps. We got a lot of great support from the development team, but what we really changed is that we held back 10% of the spots in summer camp from general registration, and then made concerted efforts to recruit using our partners in the city of Cleveland, CMSD, so that we could expand that offering. You can see here from 2022 to 2024, we had an 800% increase. Now, we still have room. Again, we have about 2,000 campers a year, so we will continue to try to fill all of that 10% using the summer camp scholarships. And we've expanded the scholarships to our winter break camps, our spring break camps, and to the nature preschool.
How do we fund those scholarships?
The scholarships are coming in from different sources. Sometimes they're a set gift that has come in through development, usually an individual donor. We use actually the general outdoor education restricted fund. When people click, I want to donate a recurring gift to Cleveland Metro Parks, and they check outdoor experiences, it goes into that fund. So we're using that fund for part of that money as well. More summer camp. I know I've been here before, and I've talked about our Euclid Beach Summer STEM Adventure Camp. We just finished our third year of this. Again, this is focused just for the community in the Euclid Beach area. We recruit only from Collinwood, East Cleveland, and Euclid for this. It is a free camp, 4 days a week, full camp. It's a combination of typical summer camp experiences like swimming and fishing, as well as that hands-on STEM piece. We were really excited this year. We received a federal grant from the Institute for Museum and Library Services that's going to fund us for the next 3 years, not only to expand that summer camp program, but to expand that outreach throughout the year, which is really a great segue into the Barge 225 initiative. So we were really working to engage with that community now in advance of that location opening to find out what it is that they're looking for. Kids Nature Lunch and Learn, this is our mobile outreach team. This is our partnership with the Greater Cleveland Food Bank. We just finished our third year with them as well. You can see we piloted this our first year. We found that there was a lot of demand, and when we got to this year, we offered 30 different dates out of Euclid Creek Reservation, Bedford Reservation, and Lakefront. This summer, we served almost 1,500 lunches and had almost 2,500 guests here. So this has been a wonderful success. We're looking to engage some more partners here to really enhance that learning experience. Youth Outdoors Fellowship Program, that we just finished our first full year. This is the program that we developed to engage with high school students from Cleveland and the surrounding suburbs. This operates as a training program. We have a fall cohort and a spring cohort. Each cohort meets over 3 months, where we talk about career exploration and resume building and leadership skills. And then this summer, we were able to employ our first set of students here at Cleveland Metro Parks. We placed 4 students throughout the Metro Parks. These were paid jobs that we had with these students, so that was a combination of that real work experience and that mentoring. So things are on track again. This summer, we're hoping to place somewhere around 10 students with Cleveland Metro Parks. Shifting gears a little bit, our outdoor recreation team, again, thinking about this inclusivity and accessibility, has really been growing the adapted recreation program. This year, they received 2 significant grants to help us purchase some equipment that will help folks with mobility challenges get out on the trail. In addition, we took advantage of the new pump track and that popularity. We offered our first pump track race, and we've really expanded the family campout program. We offer 3 of these per year in the summer. This is really aimed at people who have maybe never camped before. So we offer the equipment for use, and we offer that kind of comfortable group setting of camping so that people can dip their toes in it, see if this is something that they would like to take on themselves. And then finally, larger initiative, Garfield Park Nature Center. We are so fortunate to get to open and operate a nature preschool here in this amazing new renovated space. When we built this program out, again, this was a very targeted effort. We are recruiting from the community in and around Garfield Park. We also did the legwork so that we could receive the county childcare vouchers. And so this year we have 10 students. Our capacity in the group is 12, so we're really close. About 50% of those students are on either scholarships or waivers, and 70% of them are coming from the 1 or 2 mile radius right around Garfield Park. Just a couple highlights from our nature centers. North Chagrin Nature Center, very creative use and engagement at Squire's Castle. We really ramped up our curiosities at the castle after the first year. We saw this is really popular. So this is highlighting all of the creepy, cool, interesting history and nature in and around Squire's Castle. We had a donor event that was very well received. And then when we did the actual public event, we had over 1,200 people there. So it was a beautiful and very, very fun event. North Chagrin's also been doing some facility upgrades. We worked on their children's play area in the building. We're looking at some larger upgrades and potential additions to that space. And in the Nature Education Building, we are outfitting that through some generous donations to become more of a hands-on STEM learning center. We installed a smart board, got a lot of microscopes and some other equipment there. Rocky River has been doing a lot of work here this year as well. We just at the end of 2024 opened our storybook trail funded through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. So this is an initiative where you take a children's book, you make it mega size, you put it on the trail, and the idea is that you're combining literacy and nature. So that opened up on the trail adjacent to the building. It's been very popular so far. And then they've also been focusing a lot of efforts on engaging a young adult audience. We started the Nature Trivia program in 2022, partnering with our colleagues and golf at the Big Met Grill. And then they've been doing some adult programming over at Emerald Necklace Marina. This Pints and Pups back in October that had shelters bringing in dogs and educational programming had over 300 people that came to the event. So people love their dogs in the parks. And finally, the Watershed Stewardship Center. We've been doing a lot of work, both in terms of the building itself and exhibits. In fact, I'm off to a meeting with our new exhibit designers after this to really update that space and make it more inclusive and welcoming while still sticking to the mission of that partnership with the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District and West Creek Conservancy. So you'll be able to see here that we have almost doubled our attendance in that building since 2019, and significantly more than doubled our number of programs there. So that team has been doing some great work. And they too have been doing an after-school program with federal funding that's really looking to engage middle school youth from CMSD in the idea around restoration and STEM careers. And finally, we've had some great initiatives throughout the division. We decided to really capitalize on the power of all of us working together, staff-wise and resource-wise. We started our native plant sale in 2022. This is the Saturday of Mother's Day weekend, so obviously we sell plants, but we also share information. We run some workshops in advance, we share information there. as a way to promote native plant gardening. We've more than tripled our plant sale revenue on that. Winter break camps, well, they're winter camps and schools out camps, so we don't have our 2024 numbers yet, but looking for to give families an opportunity to do something when kids are off school. And then a winter waterfall series. People love the frozen winter waterfalls. Last year, we unfortunately did not have a lot of winter, but we're hopeful this year that we'll get some numbers. We had some hikes that, down at like Bridal Veil Falls where I think we had 70 people show up for these frozen waterfall hikes. So that's it. It's been a great year. We're looking forward to some more another great year in front of us. And are there any questions?
Mary, I had a question. Is it possible, and maybe this isn't possible, but is it possible to open the metro parks to private people that want to have their own little camp? And this could be a whole bunch of different things, but I remember when I was younger, there were a lot of people that did that, and they would just, you know, they used country clubs and all sorts of different things. But that might enable us to leverage even more campers, where they would probably either they'd probably be non-scholarship.
Right.
And they wouldn't be associated with us, but we'd probably have to put some requirements on them to be able to allow them to use our land, I would guess. Is that ever been experimented with?
So we actually have some of that happening already. I know there are several groups, one in particular that I think of that rents, I believe, River Grove Shelter at North Chagrin all summer long. And works with children on the spectrum. So they rent that facility from us and they run their camps. You know, we also obviously have the history of the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts who had those facilities, in particular, top of the hill at North Chagrin, some different cabins that they ran. I don't think they do that as much, but the Scouts still do run some camps out of those, out of our facilities as well. So it certainly is an option. I think one of the things we would obviously want to make sure that we're looking at in those partnerships is, you know, looking at the quality and the types of camp they're opening.
How would you do that?
How would we find those partners potentially?
No, how would you qualify? I mean, that could be a problem.
I mean, I think it would be things like looking at curriculum, you know, and making sure that there's mission alignment with what we do. I'm not sure that, for instance, we would want to run a soccer camp in the parks because we're about connecting with nature.
Yeah,
so I think it would be mission alignment, curriculum review, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Okay, but that's a great idea. Thank you. Anything else?
Very good. Mary,
thank you.
And thank you to the center managers, Nat 1s, Nat 2s, our entire team. I mean, when you look at the impact that they have across the board, you know, they are one of our more outward-facing, you know, groups. And so we're very pleased under Mary's leadership the last 5 years. We welcomed her in COVID, and she had to work her way through and learn her staff. And when you see her numbers, she's truly done a remarkable job with the teams and the work that we're doing. And there's some plans for North Chagrin along the way. And so we're incrementally continuing to invest in those areas. That is it for the information briefing items and policy. There is no old business. The next regular scheduled meeting is Thursday, February 20th at 8 a.m. here in the Rezepka boardroom, and there is an executive session. Rose?
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing the purchase or acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Yvette Yitzu?
Yes.
Bruce Rinker?
Yes.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Any motion to
adjourn? So moved.
Second.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't we have to? No, we don't do a roll call?
No.
No.
All in favor then?
We have moved the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.